The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
This is Up on Taconic, and for this week's episode, we have a feature-length interview with Audrey Aristia. You might know her for the locally viral video to the North Adams area, They're Building a Starbucks. In this interview, we will talk a little bit about the creation of the music video, what's it like to create art in the modern world, as well as what it's like working for locally owned businesses and all the community building that surfaces around that. Now, let's get right into the interview. So, how are you doing today, Audrey?
I'm good, Avery. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So I would like to just jump right into it. And with the first question, what made you want to create the music video and song?
Okay, so I feel like I want to give a little bit more information about like what the music video was. It's called They're Building a Starbucks. I have it up on YouTube and Instagram. And I created it maybe even 2 years ago now when all of the buzz in town was occurring around the Starbucks plaza and plaza being built in downtown North Adams, where I live. When I talked to people about the Starbucks before I made the song and video, really all I was hearing was a lot of negative opinions about it. Most people were very unhappy about this corporate entity coming to town. Many people compared it to the Walmart coming to town as well, the Walmart on the Curran Highway, and how that impacted local businesses downtown. So when I created the song, it was really just a half an hour of anger coming out as music. And I wasn't intending for it to really go anywhere or be seen or take off the way that it did. But I feel that, I mean, it got about 10,000 views on YouTube. I haven't checked recently, but like 5,000 maybe. No, I'm sorry, 500 or more on Instagram and 10,000 on YouTube. And it was shared on Facebook a bunch of times in like MCLA alumni groups. And it had an immense reach in the Berkshires that I was not anticipating. So when I created it, it was just to express my anger about the situation. And not having any power as it relates to the way that land is used in the town I live in.
Yeah, that can be very frustrating, especially as like a high school student, teenager. We're always complaining that we have nothing to do and there's nothing anywhere. So like, oh, there's just more stuff to buy. I mean, I literally counted. There are 3 Starbuckses in like the Pittsfield Plaza.
Are you kidding?
Like, yes, with the, whatchamacallit? So there's one in the Barnes & Noble. There's one standalone. And there's one in the Market 32. There are 3 Starbucks in that one plaza.
Starbucks is especially notorious for doing this, where they'll like look at their data or whatever, and the way that they interpret their data that, oh, we're having a lot of Starbucks sales in this area, is let's build another Starbucks. Nobody wants that. You know, maybe it supports their business and their, you know, their model, but it doesn't actually bring any value to the community.
It really doesn't. Also, just to get this out of the way, so the thoughts and feelings expressed by me and my guests on this podcast are not of that of WTBR or Taconic TV. They are only our own. Okay, so I'm really curious. You've talked about like the impact of the music video. Would you like to go more deeper on that and sort of what happened afterwards?
Yeah, so when I released it, it didn't take off immediately. And then, like I said, I didn't expect it to, and I didn't really make it to be seen by lots of people. But if I recall correctly, I mean, it happened pretty quickly. I released it on YouTube. I put it together in like maybe a week or two. I recorded it with my partner, Brisby, your older brother.
Yes.
And just like around the area of the lot. And then I edited it together again, just like for fun and to express myself. And then I found that it was getting a response. After a couple of days, people started to like comment on it on Instagram, and they were sending it to people that I didn't even know these people. Even my best friend who lives in Beverly, Massachusetts, over on the North Shore, her dad went to MCLA before it was MCLA. It was North Adams State College. And he saw it. So this reach was pretty crazy. He saw it in like a Facebook group for alumni.
Oh, that's crazy.
And then I got reached out to by a reporter from the Boston Globe's secondary website, boston.com. And they interviewed me while I was sitting on my friend's back porch. And then there was an article about me on boston.com.
That's crazy.
I know. So yeah, really did not expect that. And then people started recognizing me at work as well. I was working at the time at Tunnel City Coffee in Williamstown, and people would come in and they'd be like, "Hey, are you the one that did that song and video?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's me. This is a little strange." But that would start conversations with people, which I found to be mostly valuable interactions with people who were similarly angry. So what I found was that my song and video resonated with people. And even though it didn't have a specific call to action in it, which when I talked to the woman who reached out to me from boston.com, I explained that like it really was just mostly an expression of frustration. There are a lot of things that we could do to make this better, but that wasn't my focus at the time because I felt powerless and I just wanted to do something with that powerless feeling. So a lot of people felt that way too, and they talked to me about it, and I was like, wow, this is having more reach than I thought. There were a few interactions I had, like one guy who came in and talked to me, he was a land developer, and so he was the basically target audience for my frustration. And we did not connect. So there were a few interactions like that where he was talking about how, you know.
It was great for his wallet, so he wanted to do it.
Basically, yeah. It was the kind of thing where, like, when I would talk to people who were also similarly frustrated, the underlying theme of the conversation would be, things shouldn't be this way, and I wish we could do something. But in the conversation with the land developer gentleman, the underlying theme felt more like, this is how things are, and this is how they should remain, from his end of the conversation.
So sort of the status quo benefits me.
Right,
and
right.
Obviously, people who are benefit from the status quo kind of don't want it to change.
Exactly, exactly. But he was just taking it for granted that people like him are going to continue to benefit from these systems, and I ended the conversation because that's not where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, like being very respectful, being very courteous, but like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
people don't see eye to eye, and that's.
And I was at work as well. So, yeah. You know, that I was kind of trapped in that situation.
Yeah.
I was kind of like in the customer service environment where I had to be very polite to him. And not that I wouldn't have been polite if I wasn't in that situation, but yeah, it was an awkward encounter, but most interactions that I've had regarding the song and video have been positive.
Yeah. Talking more about like working in like local business and stuff, how has this music video affected like your work with local businesses, or like how has your local business been?
So I've worked for a number of local businesses in North Adams specifically, in Williamstown, because I live in North Adams. I've only had a handful of jobs in my adult life anyway. My first job was at a historical society, which kind of set the tone for what kind of work I wanted to do. It was nonprofit work. It was a pretty low wage as a result. And I was mapping a cemetery, a very old cemetery in Beverly, where I went to college. When I moved away from Beverly and I moved to North Adams, I was excited to work for Mass MoCA because I'm an artist. I spent maybe 2.5 years being a museum attendant at Mass MoCA. And then after that, I worked at Tunnel City Coffee, and now I work at Hexagon Bagels, on Main Street in North Adams. So I've jumped around a little bit. Mass MoCA was, a great example of, both Mass MoCA and Tunnel City, were good examples of jobs that I enjoyed doing, but that the systems that are at play don't always benefit everybody. Mm-hmm. Mass Mocha is, I love the people there. There's a wonderful vision, but of course, you might know that the workers went on strike.
Yes.
At one point, I think last year or the year before, I didn't work there anymore by that time, but I participated in the strike, or supporting them on the picket line. So there's always been some tension between the management and the people on the floor. And when I worked at Tunnel City, I was doing coffee work, and I was making that song about the Starbucks coming in at the time that I was working as a barista. And I found that parallel to be interesting to me, and it was also interesting to some other people, because when I started working for Tunnel City Coffee, it was a actual like mom and pop kind of business. It has since moved a little bit more corporate. And I've spoken to people who come into Hexagon Bagels about that and how that has impacted like the consumer base there. They feel the impact of like, how the management of Tunnel City has changed the way that things operate, and also the attitudes of the people who work there, have shifted because of the way that they are treated. And I, felt that as well. So, I think there's a lot to be said for, locally owned businesses who treat their employees like people. And that is how I feel at Hexagon. So where I've landed now, I guess, is, you know, in a real actual like mom and pop type feeling environment where everybody's paid well, my labor feels meaningful, and, you know, the work benefits the people around me. You know, people come in for a bagel. It's food service, which I always told myself as a high schooler, I'd never wanted to go into food service because all I heard were nightmare stories. But there really is, because food, we all need it, right? We all got to eat. It doesn't have to be miserable. It doesn't have to be a nightmare. I really love my job right now. But that contrasts with how I felt about like the idea of a Starbucks coming in. There were two pros that people would say to me, like, isn't it great that it's going to bring jobs? But are these jobs that we want to have? Do you want to do this job? Do you want to be a barista at Starbucks?
Yeah, to talk a little bit about like my perspective as a teenager, who's worked very minimal jobs, but like would consider, definitely wants to live in the North Adams area, sort of after I get out of high school. I would not want to work at a Starbucks if I was in there, especially being more, let's say, inspired by your work with local business. I would want to work for a local business. I wouldn't mind working in food service. I just would not want to work for like, oh, big corporation came in, made a new building. Isn't it so great that people can get new jobs that make them want to like not work there or not be around? Like, no, nobody wants to work the jobs that make them upset. So especially when we have this big pot of land, you could make a new building that could host new venues. I mean, we just went to a To the Moon tournament, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. That's a new local business that's opened up for cards and collectibles. I'm pretty sure the business is relatively booming for them. It's doing really well. Renzi's, we went there while I was down in North Adams for break. Mm-hmm. They're doing really good, if I'm correct as well. So it's like new businesses, people will go to them if they provide a service that doesn't already exist. If we build a building or venue in there, we will get more people coming in. We will get more actual customer base that can stick and last and support actual community members rather than just, oh, big corporation walked in.
Right. And the way that we organize the footprint of those businesses is also important. So, you know, instead of building a huge parking lot like the Walmart, right, mm-hmm. Having more businesses that are kind of shaped like the ones in the historic Eagle Street downtown would be better for the environment, better for business, because it's less expensive to maintain those types of structures. And we would be moving a little bit further away from car infrastructure, which would also be good because I know that lots of people want to bike and be able to walk in their downtown and don't have, you know, there's already, my song mentions, there's several drive-thrus in that particular intersection
there
already.
A McDonald's and a Dunkin' it's, already in that intersection.
It's a joke. It's a joke to people that there are so many drive-thrus and they were going to add two more. That's very silly. Mm-hmm. And destructive to the infrastructure. People are not happy about it. It's going to cause accidents. It's going to be a problem. You know, you don't need to be a genius to see that. So I feel, and also my song mentioned it. It could have been a park. It could have been green space. It could have been housing. We have a housing shortage in North Adams. It's kind of a big problem. Mm-hmm. You know, rents are skyrocketing. It's not as bad as Boston, sure, but it's like pretty bad. You know, you got a one bedroom for $1,200. That's you got to share that room. You know, so especially with the wages of the kinds of jobs that the Starbucks would be providing.
Yeah. Talking a little bit more about like local businesses and jobs like you've worked for and talking about like a lot of like the moral aspects of it. Do you think there's like a moral aspect to working for local businesses that you feel or anything like that?
Yeah, I think as I've gotten older, I've understood a little bit better that my labor has value. And the labor that I provide to whoever I'm working for, I'm creating that value by providing my labor. So, you know, for example, if I worked at a Starbucks, I would be providing them labor and there would be a kind of siphoning relationship because the people who are, you know, they work the job, they don't really have a relationship with management. In my current job, I have a relationship with my management and it's a positive relationship. I feel like I'm being listened to and heard. This isn't necessarily the case always with local businesses. I think that, you know, when you are providing value to a business that is in the place you live, it's supposed to be, you know, distributing its benefits to the people who live there. If it's a big corporation that is kind of like global, like Starbucks, that money is leaving town. You know what I mean? With something like, you know, Tunnel City Coffee or Hexagon Bagels or, you know, any of the local businesses in North Adams, you would think that, you know, the money kind of stays in town in a way because the business owner is not a global conglomerate. So in that sense, I do feel like my labor at Hexagon Bagels is more valuable to the community because people from the community come in, they create community in the space. The owners of the business are engaging with their community. They're not just like, you know, not talking to people, not having events. You know, they are participating in the local environment.
In community building.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, with Tunnel City, it sort of is moving away from that a little bit. And I think that businesses can do it performatively to make money, but so there's kind of a line to walk. But when it comes to like working for a local business versus working for a big conglomerate, I do think that when you think about where the money goes, it's if you work for something like a Starbucks or a Walmart, the money just it leaves town and it doesn't benefit anybody. And
just
I think
fizzles.
That exactly it goes to the big guys and then it doesn't ever come back. It doesn't ever seed back into the people who live in the place where the labor is being provided.
Yeah. So. I mean, talking more about like community building, as that was a big aspect of why you like working for local businesses. Have you ever made any long lasting connections from working at local businesses?
Oh yeah. I mean, even the ones where, even when I was having some negative experiences working for local businesses, I made lots of lasting connections with people. I want to say pretty much all of my friends in the area came from the jobs that I worked. I met my partner at Mass Mocha. I met lots of friends when I was working as a museum attendant. I made a lot of friends working as a barista, and I'm continuing to make lasting connections at Hexagon. I think some of the only really powerful connections I've made with people have been through work. And that is what happens when we don't have a lot of space in our lives other than working and going home.
Mm-hmm.
So as somebody who has worked for local businesses who is also an artist, a lot of my time is kind of accounted for. You know what I mean? I'm trying to have a practice on the side. I'm not trying to, like many artists try to be full-time artists. I'm not trying to do that. There's a lot of reasons for that. If you want, we can talk about it.
I'd love to.
Okay. But I think it might be relevant to you and some of your peers also who might want to be doing creative work. But I have sort of acquiesced to the idea of having a day job at this time in my life because it is consistent income. And the way that I spend time doing it in my life means that it is pretty much the only outlet I have for community building. There's not a lot of, I don't know if you're familiar with the third spaces with that term.
I am not. I'm actually curious. Would you mind explaining it?
Sure. Third spaces, I might not explain it very well, but the idea is that in your community, you're supposed to have places to hang out and meet people and have community that don't cost money. So like the library is an example of a third space. But can you think off the top of your head of like any place that you might like hang out with your friends where you're not expected to spend money?
Not really. The only place I can think of is like the park, which are usually made for like really young children. So as a teenager, it is hard to sort of engage with that space. Usually the parks that when I've interacted at parks recently, I went out with Aiden and Dalton last year for the summer vacation. We had a great time, but it's not like we did anything meaningful. In fact, we didn't even really do anything at the park. There's literally just a basketball like court and then like a soccer / like hockey court as well. And that's like they have like a really minuscule swing set for like babies, like very young children. And that's it. And the most meaningful thing that we did that was like an activity was we went to a corner store, bought snacks and like ate them while just hanging out. So it was more just to hang out with friends in person during summer vacation and like feel the nice weather rather than to actually like do anything.
Exactly. And I mean, you just said it, the most meaningful part of that was when you went to the store.
Yes.
So like, yeah. So we are facing a dearth of third spaces, in our modern life. And, as a result, I can say this, and I know a lot of, my fellow 20 somethings can say this, pretty much all of our friends have come from jobs because that is what we spend our time doing.
Yeah. Fortunately, I had the luck of actually my friends at school being at my work when I worked at Target. That Aiden and Dalton both worked there as well. So
okay.
So that was actually nice to have like actual semi-community. And funnily enough, I did meet some people. I don't talk to them anymore, unfortunately, but I did meet some people like this guy Logan. He was my age. He went to a different high school, but like we chatted a decent bit and he was a really good guy. So that was nice. There was some, but yeah, it proves your point. There's a lot of community in jobs and not a lot right. in those third spaces.
And for you right now, it's school. And then, yeah, when it's school, you know, from like 0 to 18, it's school. That's where you meet people mm-hmm. and that's it. Or maybe, you know, your parents have friends and maybe their friends have kids and you meet people that way. But like, that's kind of it. And then college. Again, that's mm-hmm. what it is, jobs. And then that's kind of how it looks for the foreseeable future. That's where you meet people. Unless you're, you know, really going out of your way to engage with some of the things that go on in town, which I am thankful that North Adams has kind of like a community that is trying to make things happen. You know, I was involved with the Assets for Artists. That's a group that helps artists get grants and do their work and have the capacity to do their work. And I did receive a grant from them last year. Basically, it was a grant that was meant to help me increase my capacity as an artist. And it was limited to Northern Berkshire artists. And then that was a cohort of maybe 20 or so people that we all had a show together. So that sort of thing, you know, is happening all the time in North Adams, which is really great. But I know lots of people still complain that there's not a lot going on, and it's true because, you know, we've got a lot of empty storefronts. We've got a lot of, land that is not being developed. That Colvest lot that
I saw
wrote
still
the song
vacant.
About, it is.
It's still vacant when I was up there.
They tore up the
yesterday.
Hill. Yeah. Yesterday you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
They tore up the hill. They made it flat. They put up a sign intending to like put a plaza there and they haven't done anything with it.
It's just kind of sitting.
It's just sitting there.
They got cold feet after your music video.
I know people have made that joke a lot and I think it's funny. But I really doubt it. Starbucks apparently pulled out, but then somebody I know who has some inside information told me that like they may still be building the Starbucks. Either way, it's going to be a plaza and there will be businesses in the plaza. But I think also sometimes this particular developer will build a plaza and then won't fill it with anybody. So it might just sit empty. We don't know. And that's the thing about like living in a community and not having any power about like what happens in the community. It's
very
number
frustrating.
One, very frustrating, very depressing. I mean, you are a teenager. You have very little power.
Unfortunately, yes.
Unfortunately, yes. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm saying that because
it's true.
I know what it's like. I remember what it was like to be a teenager. You feel very, very powerless because you are in this weird limbo state where you are sentient and cognizant enough to know kind of like what the world is about, but you are still a minor and you are still like barred from making your own choices in certain ways, which, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing. Like, there's a lack of experience to account for here. You know, we don't want to just like send you off into the world.
I don't know what I'm doing.
But I think in many ways you do, you know, mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I think that should be respected, but also like that doesn't go away. I have learned in certain ways I have come into a sense of power as an adult and I have the ability to make my own choices. But then the world around me says, no, you don't have money. So you're not able to make choices for your community. You're not able to decide what goes into these plots of land because you just live here. You don't have investment cash, you know? And so one great thing that I'll say about North Adams is that they recently implemented a community land trust. I'm not entirely sure what that's up to, but a community land trust, do you know what that is?
No.
So one of the things that a community land trust can do, I can't explain all of the things that they can do, but one of the things they can do is pool money from community resources. People will come together and they will pool their money and then they will buy up plots of land and decide what's best for the community and put it there.
That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, it kind of sounds to me like the way it should work. Because,
just in general.
Yeah.
This is the community space. The people should be deciding what they're doing democratically and making the decisions based on what works best for each person in the community.
Exactly. It is kind of a Band-Aid fix because it's sort of like a way for us to get around the way that things are in the sense where like the way that things are being people with money make the decisions. Okay, well, if we pool our resources, then we can be the people with money is the idea. I can't offer any better solutions. Most of the time, I'm just a guy who's frustrated, but
aren't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah. So to circle back on something you were talking about a little bit before, you wanted to talk more about like art and what's it like to be an artist. Would you like to expand upon that? No.
Sure. I can't speak for every artist, but so I went to, for some context, I went to Montserrat College of Art in Beverly, Massachusetts, after graduating from Dallas High School in Dallas, Pennsylvania in 2018. And I graduated from Montserrat with a degree in book arts in 2022. And I took a lot of classes in printmaking as well, and, you know, illustration. So I had a wide swath of things that I was studying at the time, but technically I'm a bookbinder and a printmaker.
That's pretty sick.
Thank you. I am working on putting together a studio in my house, in the basement of my house, that I share with my mom. And basically my practice, like I said earlier, kind of has to live around my day job. This is the case for a lot of artists and a lot of people who are creative give up their craft because, unfortunately, because they can't fit it in around their work. They have rent to pay, they have bills to pay, groceries to buy. And art does not usually pay the bills, especially as they get higher and higher. So what I've had to face as an artist is kind of like, is my practice doomed? Will I have to face giving up on the thing that is meaningful in my life, in order to live? And I've decided that the answer is absolutely not. Because to give up on my art is to give up on my life. I don't make art for money. I make art to express myself and to connect with the people around me. So in a sense, I suppose my practice is a community building one. And like you said earlier, I did kind of do that with my song. It created a lot of connections I wasn't expecting, but that's kind of how it goes. You don't really know what the impact of your work is going to be. And I think that that's one of the beautiful things about it. So I make work, sometimes I show it at galleries in town, but it's not my primary focus. I make it because it is the most human thing, I think, to create. It is the most human thing in this world to make something, whether you show it to somebody else or not. And it is entirely secondary in its importance to have a job that is a wage job. To me, anyway, it's I love feeding people at Hexagon. I really love, you know, giving people good food and, you know, making them happy. And especially because we have that pay it forward card where you can like.
Oh, that saved me so many times.
I know.
That has the best bagels. Shout out Hexagon Bagels. I just had like the lox, was it?
Oh, yeah.
You made me the lox the other day.
Yeah.
One of, if not the best bagel I've ever had in my life. It was so good.
Yeah. But they have this gift card where you can put money on it for somebody else to use it, or you can use it yourself for your order. So it's basically, you know, getting free food. And that's one of the many ways that they engage with their community in like an actually like positive way, and support people. But anyway, my art is the most important expression of self that I have. And, while it may not fit into the systems in our country and in our economic system, it doesn't really support my need to create. I would really need to claw and scrape to try and make a living doing my work. I would need to engage a lot more with social media. I would need to have a beautiful website, and those things are fine. And I really admire artists who spend a lot of time doing that work. But it isn't for me. I find it a little bit soul-sucking to have to be my own social media guy as well as the artist. But I don't have money to hire somebody, you know? So a little bit of a tangent, sorry.
No, it's great. That's what we do here. We love talking and keeping the conversation going. So in light of that, I would love to talk more about, like, what has propelled your art forward? Because to give an example, like, you've done a lot of work for Gun Gal, and a lot of artist work for that. You've also done a lot of art for me, which has always been really amazing. So I'm curious, like, what creative outlets have you used to, like, propel your artistry?
Well, the two examples you give are honestly the things that I'm most excited about most of the time is making art for other people. I'm always really... I'm always propelled forward, as you put it, by the idea of making somebody else happy with my work. So it's really just like the two things, like to express my own emotions, which are often very intense, and to make somebody else happy. Gun Gal is the Gunslinger Galaxy. That's your older brother, Brisby, made a tabletop role-playing game from scratch. And so I make a lot of artwork for that campaign. And I love drawing your favorite characters for you. It just makes me happy.
I love all of the Agnes Tachyon drawings you've given me over my life. They're all amazing. Oh, and I still have the Blade drawing from my, 16th birthday, I believe.
Yes.
I still have the one with the three cookies incident.
Yes.
For context, I accidentally ate three of my brother's cookies because I thought it was a sandwich cookie, but they were all just three cookies stacked on each other. So that was a really funny moment.
Yes.
So looking forward, do you plan to do any more like creative ventures or any more music videos or any more art that's sort of like you put out into the world?
Yeah, I definitely do. The chaos of life has kept me from doing anything consistently. And I know that, you know, the algorithms love consistency. And so I have not really been engaging with social media that much. But I have a website where you can see my work. It's my name, audreyaristio.art. And I also have an Instagram where you can see some of my more recent work. It's usually where I'm going to be putting it. But I do watercolors, I do printmaking, and I do a lot of music that I don't show anybody. But I'm hoping that in the next year or two, I can put together an album.
Oh, that would be a very interesting project. I'd love to listen to it when it's out.
Yay.
So out of like these local jobs you've worked, has there any been like a style of job that you thought you could make a career out of or really enjoy doing?
That's a great question, Avery. I'm actually going to throw it back at you. Can you define career for me?
Oh, that's a great question. So you've talked about a ton of local jobs you've done. You've done like baristing. You've done food service. You've also done the one I find super interesting, the work you've done for like cemeteries and grave sites and stuff like that. And obviously you've explained that like artistry is something you want to do more as fun and you want to keep it fun and you don't want to ruin it for yourself sort of by making it a job. But are there any jobs that you've any odd job styles you've enjoyed that you would like to continue doing and work on that as like a primary thing?
There's a few things that I've done that I do really enjoy enough to do them hopefully for the rest of my life, or be engaged in for the rest of my life. Because here's the thing about like the word career has a connotation that is difficult for me to envision for my life. Many people do the same thing until they die. And that's what I imagine when I hear the word career. Some people that I worked with at my barista job had been there for many years or had been doing food service in different ways for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. And that works for some people. And that brings fulfillment for some people. And I can see that happening for me, but I don't see it bringing me the kind of fulfillment that I want out of my life. When I worked for the Historical Society, I was giving tours of historic homes, and I was doing cemetery work. I was doing an inventory and map of the oldest cemetery in Beverly, like 1600, 1700 burials from colonial times. And I recently went to the Association for Gravestone Studies had their Western Massachusetts meeting in Barre, Massachusetts, which is actually in Central Mass, which is very silly for them to call it the Western Mass meeting. But, you know, anything west of Worcester is Western Mass, right? So I went there and I talked to people and I networked with a few people who are working diligently on mapping software and like doing preservation work, which I've also done. So I will sometimes work the summers traveling back and forth 3 hours every couple of weeks for a company called Epoch Preservation. That's EPOCH. Rachel Meyer is a wonderful lady, and she employs me as a part-time, very, very, very part-time, because I can't get over there very much, to the Boston area, doing preservation work, resetting fallen stones, putting back together with epoxy stones that have fallen apart. But the thing about the work that I find most fulfilling is that it doesn't pay my bills. And I fear that, you know, you and many of your creative cohorts will find the same problem as you age. You will find that the voice acting that you want to do and yes. that you are very good at is going to be very hard for you to get into due to a lot of
competition. I know like 15 people who are like, I want to get into voice acting. And I'm like, I need to beat you.
Right. But also like how many companies are doing AI instead of hiring people now?
Probably a concerning amount. I mean, a lot of the ones that I would want to work for probably don't. A lot of them are verified by union, thankfully. We just had a ton of video game strikes and anime strikes
right.
for the industry I want to work in. They had a ton of like, hey, SAG-AFTRA really wants its AI productions now. And sadly, the union kind of shot themselves in the foot, but without getting to a huge tangent of the mismanagement of them. But generally, they are kind of accomplishing it in a way. They're getting a lot of the good things that we want. We're getting AI protections. We're getting a lot of companies to sort of sign on to SAG-AFTRA in their terms. A lot of companies are already sort of like overseas foreign work, third party. They already have conditions in play in their countries that are sort of like banning AI, so they couldn't even use it even if they wanted to for the dubs. So generally, we're actually, in my departments, we're winning. But in American dubbing and American-made projects, I am a little bit more concerned because, to keep it brief, my faith in capitalism and late-stage capitalism is waning. So I would not put it past them for a lot of American-owned companies to be like, yes, we love the beep-boop voices. That's great. We should do a lot of that. And, well
it makes them money. It makes them more money, and it's faster. They don't have to pay a clanker, so.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but they'd have to pay you for the real labor that you would be providing. And to them, that's a loss.
Yes.
Instead of the real gain that it is, because you're talented and, you know, your peers.
And people will actually pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and because I know that the consumer doesn't want AI voices.
They don't want AI voices. People already don't like flat or boring human performances. And AI performances sound even more robotic and even more spliced together. It doesn't.
You can tell. Yeah.
They don't sound real. They sound like a YouTube poop is the best example. They yeah. sound like you're splicing together different clips of an actual voice actor talking. And they are just smushing them together and going, here's your slop. And it's not real human. It's not real art. It's just there.
But even as it gets harder and harder to tell what is AI and what is human, there is still that moral element of like, there should be a real person doing this because a robot mm-hmm. can't care about it. You can care about it. And like, mm-hmm. you can get into a role. You can become a character. And like, that's what people have been doing forever. Storytelling. When I said earlier that art is like one of the basest human things that we have, that too includes storytelling. And so when you are becoming a character in a role, when you are, you know, doing voice acting, there is something, I think, very primal about that. There's something very, like, very, very human about that, that a robot absolutely cannot replicate. Even if they get so good that we can't tell the difference, which I really doubt because the human brain can tell, you know?
We'll even fail at providing, if it gets that good, I feel like we'll fail at providing the technology for that. We already know about RAM prices and water and all this
crap that they're taking up
that nobody likes.
Bulldozing neighborhoods for data centers, et cetera. It's right.
We don't have the infrastructure to support that level of technology, even right. if we could hypothetically get to that.
Right. And I mean, the fight is happening. The good fight is happening. You just mentioned all of the good union motions and like all of the movement that's happening. Like, that's what we need. Because as long as we're focusing on profit, we're not focusing on people.
Art is birthed from desperation. That's something I learned in history class. I just talked about the Black Death, not too far off. And one of the biggest things about that is the artistic movement that came out of it, because people were dying and they were like, I'm not going to go to work. I'm not going to do my responsibilities. I'm going to die anyway. So they were just making tons of art. And that's kind of how humanity works. When something bad is happening, art rises up, which is sort of what we're talking about here with your music video and the frustration and all of the emotions that come out of this feeling of helplessness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, different kinds of art come out of different kinds of desperation. I mean, people like to say that Van Gogh did his best work while he was sick, but I don't think that's true. I think that he did his best work when he had gotten help and therapy, you know? So there's that aspect, too, of, like, not all art has to be born out of desperation.
Absolutely.
And if we can make a better world, we can make better art.
True.
You know, we don't all have to be, like, rolling around in the gutter in order for there to be good art. Yeah. Yeah. I think people know what's good and what's not and what's real and what's not. And I think that, and I have faith that, at least the creative industries are going to come around, and that even if people like you and me need to continue to have a day job in order to support ourselves, that we won't let that spark die.
I think that's the most important message to sort of end it on, is that we need to make sure our voices are heard and known, and that we can't stand for stuff like this, and we need to keep creative and community building and all the people first sort of importance rather than wherever the money flows. Thank you so much for being here, Audrey Aristia. Would you like to say a few words before we...
Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much, Avery. I'm so happy that you invited me on, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
This podcast was recorded at Taconic High School in Taconic TV's podcast studio. For more from us here, check out Taconic TV on YouTube. Have a great day, and see you next week.